Welcome back to Through the Ringer. I am here today on this Friday, a lovely Friday, joining us back again, Sirit Sohi. Good to see you. We got a lot to talk about. It is March Madness, and it's already trickled into April. That's how far we've gotten in these tournaments. How are you doing?
I'm great. I'm just basically clockwork oranging basketball these days.
Right.
It's been a great time. And just ready to do more of it this weekend, honestly.
Yeah, we got a lot of good basketball to talk about, both on the men's and the women's side. We're going to stick with the women's side. We're going to start with, we got some breaking news right before we sat it up here to record. Haley Van Lith, star, obviously, of LSU, Louisville prior, Miami prior to that, so a lot of turnover in Haley Van Lith's life, but she has entered the transfer portal. Can we start there? How shocking is this on a scale of 1 to 10, and what are your thoughts when you saw the news?
Honestly, the drama, right?
A lot of drama, like, yeah.
You just that's what's honestly been so fun about covering the women's tournament so far, is just the personalities and everything that goes on, like, outside of the court, how it plays into what's going on the court. But man, honestly, with Haley Van Lith, can you blame her after just Kim Mulkey just left her out on an island against Caitlin Clark? If her draft stock hadn't already suffered enough, after we all watched that and watching the internet clown her, her shrugging herself, I think somebody called it the reverse MJ, like Caitlin Clark hitting all those threes, but it's actually Angel Reese and Haley Van Lith that are shrugging. But man, it's shocking in the sense that you're like, whoa, like, this just, we were kind of waiting to see what would happen. Her name wasn't in the players that declared for the WNBA draft, and that deadline was earlier today. Then, like, less than an hour later, we find out that she's entering the transfer portal. So it makes sense, but it's still, I'm still kind of taking it in.
Yeah, it's all kind of soaking in. You mentioned the list of people that did declare. Angel Reese is on that list. She told Vogue, that's how she announced, which I thought was a pretty baller move from Angel Reese. Yeah, anytime you can give some news to Vogue and they want to report on it, I think you're winning in the end. So Angel Reese will be in the WNBA draft. We know Caitlin Clark, she's still playing in the Final Four. We're going to talk about that, obviously, but she also will be in the WNBA draft. Just general thoughts on, this is going to be a great crop of players that are coming into the W, so that's exciting news, especially having Angel and Caitlin, who have got a nice little synergy there going in their basketball lives.
Yeah, I'm really glad that Angel ended up declaring, just for that reason alone. It also just seems like everybody wants to leave LSU now as well. Like, I'm really curious what happens with that team and what happens with Kim Mulkey. Like, her recruiting edge, I just don't know if it's going to exist anymore. There was a story in The Athletic just kind of polling players anonymously, asking them, who would you want to play with? Like, what coach would you want to play for? Dawn Staley was obviously on the top of that list. Kim Mulkey only got 2 votes. And this is somebody who's kind of been able to use, like, the cult of personality around her in order to attract people. But it feels like that shine is wearing off. So that really stands out to me. But to your question about the W, it's really interesting. Like, I'm glad that Angel went, because I'm really glad that Caitlin and her are now going to kind of always be on that same plane, not as players necessarily, but graduating at the same time.
In the same class.
Being rookies
yeah.
at the same time, right? Like, in the same way that Bird and Magic were, you hear that comparison a lot. And, you know, frankly, it makes a lot of sense. Like, the thing with Caitlin and Angel is that, you know, it allows America to have all these proxy discussions about the things that we are, like, the most obsessed with. Like, it's gender performance and presentation, it's race, it's fame, it's sports. And, you know, I'm curious to see where Angel Reese goes. So I was actually, I couldn't fall asleep last night, so I started listening to her interview with the Breakfast Club last season with Flaje Johnson. And one thing that stuck out to me is that she said that she really wants to go to a big market, like, just to continue to build her brand. And, you know, she's very straightforward about that. Like, that is very important to her. And we obviously know that about her. But she wants to be in a big city. And right now, I think most of the projections have her going to Minnesota. But if they pass on her, then Chicago and Dallas are right
there.
They're there. So that's going to be interesting to watch.
Yeah, it is cool that they're kind of cosmically connected to each other in their basketball lives. So I have to ask a simple question. I mean, obviously, we still have more to go. We have the Final Four ahead. But, like, so far in this tournament, I mean, LSU, they had their cult of personality as a team. They battled Caitlin Clark. That was an incredible game. Tied at halftime. The third quarter, you know, Iowa gets hot again opening in the second half, and they kind of stretch it out a little bit and hold on in the end. But who has won the tournament so far? Is it Caitlin Clark? Is it as banal as that? Is it that simple that she has? Because it has been a great tournament all around, and a lot of stars shining throughout.
I mean, I feel like, honestly, it has to be NC State.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, because there's good arguments for South Carolina, Iowa, UConn. There's good arguments for everybody. But the mm-hmm. thing with those three teams is we know all about them. We've known about them for a long time.
Right.
But NC State is kind of just new on the scene. If there's anybody who I think is a breakout star in the tournament so far, it's Isaiah James. You know, Sanaya Rivers, who played for South Carolina, won a ring with South Carolina, transferred to NC State, and has turned herself into a star. That's going to be a really interesting plot line in the South Carolina NC State game. Like, you know, there's always that thing of like, you know, you go back to your old stomping grounds. Do you have, I'm sure she doesn't need extra motivation in the Final Four, but you know, who doesn't? It's just a little extra spice. Who doesn't like a little extra spice? So that's going to be pretty interesting. But yeah, I mean, you know, Wes Moore just getting to put his program on the map at the same time. They have a really interesting team, and we are going to get to learn more about them. So to me, they're probably the big winners. As everybody else, as much as Iowa, they had to go through a tough conference or a tough region. You know, they're Iowa. We expected them to be back here. It's a bit of an upset that they got back here, but not like a huge one. And Caitlin Clark is doing Caitlin Clark things, as we expect her to. Mm-hmm. UConn would probably be second on my list, just given, you know, the season that they've had, the complete lack of depth. They've gone six players deep for most of the tournament, and they're still somehow standing here. And Paige Becker's being able to make this incredible comeback, where now we're having that conversation again of like, hey, who's better here? Is it Paige Becker's? Is it Caitlin Clark? Like, her being able to re-enter that conversation, being able to be healthy, frankly, and also just trolling Gino. Like, I'm really loving, I'm loving the vibe between Gino and, like, this new version of Gino that we're getting as well.
Yeah, Gino Z is what people are saying. He is, he's trying to get on board with the kids as best he can, but Paige is poking awesome, fun man. At him, and it is good. It is good for women's college basketball. Great Final Four. But it's nice that NC State on both sides. They're kind of the fun story, right? Right, I mean, they're the shocker. They're both, one was picked to finish eighth in the ACC, the other to finish ninth in the ACC, and now they're four. You know, one of the last four teams standing on both sides. Pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's awesome. I was telling you before the pod, I haven't had a chance to watch a lot of the men's side, but I finally watched some DJ Burns highlights.
Yeah,
I love that guy. I should have known. He's exactly my type of player. We talked about it last time with Alyssa Peely, but like, I just don't know. Is he like modern Z-Bo? Is he like tall Zion? But he probably doesn't have, like, he's not like athletic like Zion.
I think he is pretty athletic. I mean, that's the thing. He was the number three player in the class with Zion in South Carolina. So he's in Zion's class, high school class, funny enough, talking about the cosmic connections of things. Yeah, he's a South Carolina guy in Zion's class. I think Aaron Nesmith was second in that class in South Carolina. So another NBA player that has had some fame. So DJ Burns is in that class of guys. He has played against those guys.
Did he play football at all?
I don't know if he really played football, but it seems like people want him to play football. That is like the new trend. But he's a really good basketball player, and I do think he's going to put a lot of pressure on Edie, which will be fun to see. Now, we got a lot of bigs on the men's side, and you love the bigs, and we love the bigs in general. Let's talk about big names, because we do get Caitlin Clark taken on Paige Becker's. It is Paige Buckets versus Caitlin Clark. The UConn fans, if you talk to them, they'll tell you Caitlin Clark doesn't stand a chance when it comes to Paige Buckets. Can we talk about that? Is that a brewing rivalry? I know they're friendly with each other, but will this be a game that kind of starts a new rivalry between the both of them?
Yeah, I mean, it almost feels like it's reigniting a rivalry that got interrupted because of all the injuries that Paige dealt with. Absolutely, though. I mean, like, I think that's another group that, I mean, Paige is going to be coming back another year, so they're not going to be in the same draft class, but I do think that those are two names that are going to be connected for a long time, because they have what Angel and Caitlin don't have, and that they mostly play the same position. Paige has been playing out of position, but she's played point guard for most of her career. They're going to spend time guarding each other, you know, in this upcoming matchup. So when you get moments like that, it adds a deeper dynamic, I think, to any rivalry there is. And then also the basketball debate between them, it's one of those interesting ones that I think is so potent as far as discussion goes, because I don't think that there's a good answer to it. And I think it depends on what you prefer as a basketball fan. And they're so close to each other, because like, the way that I look at Caitlin is the way that I think a lot of people look at Caitlin, which is she's Steph Curry for the women's game, right? And she ignites this Iowa offense. She is the engine. She is the fuel. She is the alpha. She is the omega. She makes everything go for that team. She gives them a very distinct style. She's the reason that they run. They have built their three-point shooting in her image. And then with Paige, you have a player who's much more well-rounded, who's a better defender, who has played out a position and has now become like a great post defender and is one of the best perimeter shot blockers. And, you know, like plays basketball like it's chess. Like she can dissect basically any cover. Like one of the most, we talk about her taking over against USC, but when they played Syracuse, she was like a walking timeout, man. Like every single time they tried to switch up their zone coverages, it was like either Paige is cutting into the middle, she's getting the ball into the middle, she's hunting out a mid-range jumper, she is you know, hitting it to Aaliyah Edwards for a pocket pass. She can do all of that, and she is really methodical with the way that she plays. Like I almost look at it like if you went on the NBA side, wanted to talk about Steph Curry versus SGA, like do you take the guy who's more well-rounded and is able to do a lot of stuff and maybe can play out of position and gives you some optionality in your lineups, or do you take the person who's just like, they are such a ceiling raiser on offense that it doesn't matter that they're not as well developed in some of the other areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a little bit of a preference, but they're both great. And I think both their games are rated E for everyone. You know what I mean? Like if you can watch basketball and enjoy basketball, you know, Paige and Caitlin both stand out in their own ways of playing the game. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to do some picks in the Final Four with Seared. And we're also going to talk about Dawn Staley possibly playing Gino Auriemma. So we'll get to that on the other side of the break. Welcome back to Through the Ringer. We're still here with Seared, and we're talking women's Final Four this weekend. And now it's time to have some picks. NC State taking on South Carolina. We touched on that a little bit. Tips off tonight. It is Friday night if you're watching right now at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. The line in this one, NC State plus 11.5. So obviously Vegas thinks this is going to be a bit of a blowout, but you and I both, and I'm speaking a little bit for you, but based on what you've said so far, we think NC State has a chance in this game, and we think that this could be a close game. What do you like, and what does NC State have to do to upset South Carolina and this undefeated Dawn Staley team?
I do think that South Carolina, you can't bet against them necessarily.
Yes,
I do
right.
think that they are going to win this game, but I think that they've also shown ways that they are vulnerable. Beginning, like, if South Carolina loses, they are going to do something in this game to beat themselves. That's just, like, the bottom line. If they play a perfect game, if they play the way that they're supposed to play, I just don't think that anybody in college basketball can beat them. I think they have way too many answers to basically any question that you can ask of them. You know, so it starts there. If they potentially get away from Camila Cardoso, like they kind of did at the end of the Indiana game when Indiana got back into it, that's a potential way they could lose. If they let NC State get off from the three-point line, that's a potential way that they could lose. One thing that I think is going to be interesting is a River Baldwin versus Camila Cardoso matchup. River Baldwin is, you know, comes the closest as far as size goes to somebody who can match her so far in this tournament. She is 6'5". She's got great size. She's got great strength. So that's going to be interesting to watch. Just, you know, is Camila Cardoso going to be able to be an automatic bucket the way that she's been able to be for most of this tournament for South Carolina? The other thing that kind of, you know, makes me a little bit iffy on South Carolina is that, or NC State, is that that's a team that really likes to run the ball. I don't know that you want to get into a running match against South Carolina. Like, that's what they like to do, you know? And they just have so much depth. They have so much depth. Like, you know, it doesn't really matter. You get somebody into foul trouble, it doesn't really matter. You know, they'll bring a better player off the bench. Like, their second leading scorer is Malaysia Fulwiley, and she comes off the bench, and she's a problem. We've talked about her. She's a problem. So, yeah, I think another thing that could be interesting is getting Mimi Collins into the game, potentially playing small ball five and taking Cardoso away from the rim and then attacking it. Because right now, I mean, you know, you have her just standing there in a perimeter, and then you also have the best perimeter defenders in the nation, I think, up there, you know, led by Raven Johnson. So I think it's going to be a hard night for, you know, the Isaiah Jameses and the Saniya Rivers of the world. It's just going to be, I don't think that they've seen anything like this in the tournament so far. There are ways to beat them. I think South Carolina, if they don't hit their threes, if the opponent does hit their threes, you can potentially beat them. But
It's a tough task for anybody. And like if South Carolina comes out, pow pow's knocking down threes, we're getting the pow pow calls. I don't know. It's South Carolina is one of those teams where it's just tough in general to match up with them. I mean, they come in waves, they have tons of depth, and they have a superstar, like you said, with Cardoso. So that game is going to be interesting. NC State, a lot of people I know in my life, Seard, have decided to go to Cleveland over going to Phoenix just because of tickets and like accommodations. So Cleveland will have a lot of NC State people there supporting them. So it should be a fun game. The next game we got, this is the big showdown everybody's talking about. Connecticut, Iowa, of course, 9 p.m. Is the tip-off time Eastern. Connecticut +3.5 in this game. So Iowa's favored in this game, which is interesting. They expect Caitlin Clark to get the win here based on what Vegas is saying. What say you? What do you think about Gino Auriemma matching up with Caitlin Clark? Because I think this is going to be a fun matchup.
Did you see Gino walking back his comments about Paige the other night?
Yeah.
Just like, listen, you know, Caitlin's actually the best player. Yeah. Like, don't hurt us, Caitlin.
I don't
want
to give her any bulletin board material. She's the best. She's the greatest.
Yeah, she already has it since Caitlin wanted to go to UConn Gino had already recruited Paige. That's another reason, by the way, that they're always going to be kind of in the same conversation with each other. They always have been in that regard, too. I think I'm going to go with Iowa as well because of Caitlin Clark, obviously, but also their depth. And I also, you know, I look at their role players and I think that they're ready for this moment. Just going back to the USC game, the way that UConn stopped Juju Watkins was kind of by stopping everybody else. Juju definitely struggled with some of the traps that they sprung on them. I mean, it's not going to be the LSU Caitlin Clark do whatever you want show here. Like, that's you never get that when you have, you know, you're going to have Nico Mule potentially defending you. Ashton Shade is just such a good closeout defender. You're going to have Paige on you at different points. So it's going to be a much harder game for them execution wise, but I think that they're ready for it. They've played games like that before. I think Kate Martin, Gabby Marshall need to hit their shots. I think they will. I think that's another thing we've been seeing against USC. She's been awesome, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's been awesome. Honest, anytime that they've needed something, if they need like a big rebounding game, she gives it to them. She guarded Anissa Morrow for the majority of that game against LSU. Like, she there's a reason they call her the glue, you know? She just finds a way to show up in these big moments. And they've got the pedigree, you know? And the thing is, UConn just doesn't have a lot of depth. Like, if you're defending Caitlin, you want to have a lot of different looks that you can throw at her. Mule played a ton of that last game against USC in foul trouble. If you can get Mule into foul trouble, then you're in trouble because Gino doesn't really like to go too deep into this rotation. And maybe the same thing happens that we saw last game where UConn might get off to a better start. I just think their starting five is so good. Aaliyah Edwards is also just going to be a lot for Hannah Stahlke to deal with as well. But maybe third quarter, fourth quarter, Iowa potentially, they just run them out of the building. UConn also not a team that likes to play with pace.
Yeah, I think those are all very interesting points. I do think that based on what we saw from Mulkey and how much gripe she got for how she defended Caitlin Clark, I do think Gino is going to have a lot of things up his sleeve to throw at her to kind of, you know, signal the fact that he is the best coach, you know, or one of the best coaches in the game, which leads me to my next conversation. We do have there is a potential that we kind of get an old guard versus the new guard in the national championship game. I don't want to speak before these games even happen, but if it is Gino versus Dawn Staley, you know, there's both sides of the argument there. You know, it's kind of like the new era with Dawn, but Gino's still here. What would we suspect in that game? And that's a clash of the titans. That's like old school college basketball. The coaches are the stars in that one with Gino versus Dawn Staley.
You know what's interesting? I almost feel like they're living the same lives right now in a lot of ways. Like, just the way that they're trying to get on board with their Gen Z teammates. Like, neither of them were really prepared for the Zoomers. Like, and it's kind of interesting seeing both of their teams have been able to take down their respective defenses in different ways. Just by being, like, for lack of a better word, silly and young. You know, like, you look at the way that Paige just, like, kind of needles Gino all the time. Gino has no idea what to say. Like, the yesterday, the media availability, somebody asked Paige about the last time they played Iowa and if there's anything that you can take from it. She basically was like, oh, yeah, Gino, that was the game that I slapped you on the butt, right? And Gino had no idea what to say. First of all, Paige, we can't do that anymore. can't do that anymore. That's at his age. That's like, that's elder abuse. Like, can he even consent? Yeah. You know, we just, like, we need to have a conversation.
He's like, what'd you do?
He's like, I actually had blocked that out of my memory.
Literally.
And then the other, like, with Staley, she talked about how, you know, like, start of the season, they weren't really sure where they were going to go because, you know, she had this team that wasn't, like, answering text messages, wasn't showing up on time, was kind of just, like, a little bit out to lunch. And they had to become more disciplined as well. But she had to learn how to just let it go a little bit, let them kind of make their way there because, like, those things don't change overnight. So in an interesting way, I see so many parallels between them. And it's also, I think, because Dawn Staley, you know, before she, you know, became a Giant unto herself, like, really looked up to Gino and, like, took a lot from Gino as well. So it's like, it's kind of, it kind of exists, like, that relationship exists on a continuum, in my opinion.
Sierra, you're the best. Where can we find all your work, and then we'll let you go enjoy your Friday?
Yeah, we're doing a lot of content around the women's basketball tournament on the Ringer NBA channel. We just broke down Caitlin Clark decimating LSU, talked a little bit about the UConn matchup. We just did an interview with Zaya Cook that should be up by the time that this is up. Zaya Cook is a former South Carolina player, played on the Final Four team last year, is now a player for the Los Angeles Sparks. So that was a fun interview. And yeah, we'll have more as the weekend goes on.
I love it. This is the best. Sierra, you're the best. Thanks so much for coming to the show. Coming up on the other side, we have the Ringer's very own David Shoemaker and Ben Cruz to break down WrestleMania. We'll be right back on the other side. Welcome back to Through the Ringer. Joining us now, it is a big weekend. There's a turf war that's going on right now. We got the Final Four happening, but we also have WrestleMania happening. And joining us to break it all down from the Masked Man Show, we have David Shoemaker and Ben Cruz. What's up, fellas? Good to see you.
What's up, Tate? Thank you so much for having us on, man.
It's great to...
I know this is your Final Four weekend, so we appreciate you taking some time for ours. You know what I mean?
Hey, I just need you guys to get me up to speed as best you can. And, you know, I'm a novice here. And after doing the Masked Man Show for a few years with David Shoemaker, he made me sound semi-smart, but you guys are going to get us up to speed. And let's start with the headliner here, because this is something that a lot of people, we talked about the Final Four showdown. We got four guys who are going to be in a big showdown, a headlining showdown this weekend. We got Roman Reigns and The Rock taking on Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins. Let's start there, Shoemaker. When you see that headlining matchup, what were your first thoughts?
Well, it's crazy, and it's crazy that, you know, WrestleMania is two nights. It's Saturday and Sunday, and this is the night one main event so that they have time for Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns to go one-on-one on Sunday. Mm-hmm. You know, in a way, this is what they already should have been doing. You know, once they went to two nights, have stories from night one that affect night two. You know, you can play all that stuff together. But it's really crazy to think about. If you would ask any wrestling fan, any non-wrestling fan, 2 months ago, if they knew The Rock was going to be at WrestleMania, where would he be? They'd say the very end of night two, right? This is the super duper main event. And the kind of crazy storyline behind the storyline here is that The Rock came back, seemed to be positioned for that spot, and then decided to take a back seat and sort of help out, lift up the rest of the company by being a part of this tag team match and really just like anchoring night one. He's going to be there on night two as well, and he'll be there after that. But, you know, kind of being the biggest star, but also letting the other stars shine, it's a pretty cool turn for him.
Yeah, it's a nice pass the baton moment, and it's also, like you said, it's very selfless, you know what I mean? This is not a very me moment from The Rock, it's a very team moment. And Ben Cruz, you just saw The Rock in person, right, in Brooklyn. I mean, he's been back for about 2 months at this point in the wrestling, you know, zeitgeist, but does he look the part? Are you excited to see The Rock on this kind of stage?
Yeah, at Raw in Brooklyn, it was the first time I'd seen The Rock in person since I was in eighth grade. And he's obviously grown exponentially, both physically and you know, from a pop culture standpoint. But he pops on the screen, he pops in person, and it makes absolute sense that he's going to be there both nights. Obviously advertised for night one, but the fact that he's influencing night two is just, it goes to his, you know, I guess his Hollywood roots, right, of storytelling. Yeah. Over a long period of time. So he looks great. He sounds great, and he can whip a belt like you know, a few others out there. So it's all good.
It's going to be a fun matchup. I mean, just seeing the names there kind of, you know, just pops your eyes out when you see it there. Shoemaker, we're in the world of scouting reports in the Final Four. Do we have a scouting report for this matchup between these four guys? I mean, is there something that stands out to you?
Well, I mean, if we're going to talk behind-the-scenes storylines, I'd say that if The Rock coming back and taking a sort of backseat was the most impressive thing, then maybe the second most impressive thing was the way that WWE managed to take what seemed like some pretty obvious matches with obvious conclusions and build some tension in, at least in the storytelling. This is one of those where I think the majority of people that I talk to are saying Rock and Roman, the nominal bad guys in this match, are a shoe-in to win on night one, so that when Cody Rhodes finally wins on night two, it'll be that much of a bigger deal. Now, they could obviously take this in a million directions. I say over and over again, the key thing about pro wrestling is it doesn't matter who wins and loses, and you can get to the same point with the story that you're telling. But as far as scouting report goes, just in terms of what we're going to see in the ring, this is going to be The Rock's big opportunity to really have a wrestling match. So I think we'll get all the good Rock magic, all the people's elbows, all the Rock bottoms, anything, you know, all the stuff that people pay their good money to come see. And, you know, I think we'll see a lot of Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins playing the underdog, you know, fighting the good fight, scrapping as best they can. Cody Rhodes and Seth too, but particularly Cody, has just gotten bullied over the past couple of weeks. Busted open in the parking lot, bullwhipped, or, you know, whipped with a belt last night. you know, it's time for him to get some payback on The Rock. And whether that happens Saturday or Sunday, I guess remains to be seen. But, I mean, the crowd's going to be hot. I can't imagine that we're not going to see some big Cody Rhodes moments on Saturday too.
Yeah, that's very exciting stuff. I mean, I'm guessing The Rock will play the hits. Does he still do, like, do you smell what The Rock is cooking? I mean, am I that far out? Like, is that going to happen again?
Well,
is he going to?
So The Rock back in his heyday, and this might be his heyday historically, but in his you know, original heyday, he would be a good guy sometimes, he'd be a bad guy sometimes, and the crowd loved him so much that when he was a bad guy, he would have to stop them from the chants or whatever and say, "This is not sing along with The Rock," right? So like to keep them from doing the catchphrases. He's been in a sort of "This is not sing along with The Rock" phase for the past month or so of his return, playing the full bad guy and just trying to bring in new catchphrases and just kind of playing it straight for The Rock in a lot of ways. He did sing a blues song that made fun of his opponents. But anyway, I mean, he still does some of that stuff. And my guess is if we don't get it Saturday, there's a chance, you know, these good guy and bad guy are pretty fluid in wrestling. There's a chance that we might get it, you know, Monday night or something, you know, like we'll get our opportunity to sing along with The Rock.
Yeah, I like the sing along. We love that. There's also a triple threat matchup that we need to talk about. Logan Paul will be there. We got Logan Paul versus Randy Orton versus Kevin Owens. Ben, I'll throw that to you. What do you expect to see in this triple threat? And what do you think about Logan Paul taking into the festivities here at WrestleMania?
Yeah, you know, Logan Paul is he's the United States champion heading into this match. He's going to be in the ring with two Hall of Famers, future Hall of Famers, and Randy Orton and Kevin Owens. And I mean, his rise in WWE has been almost miraculous. You know, there's so many of us who have been watching wrestling for so long who have seen these part-timers or these celebrities come on in, do their thing and leave, and you know, they're an afterthought. That's not the case with Logan. He's just good. As much as we don't want to admit it, he was born to be a sports entertainer. Mm-hmm. I mean, so much to the point that, you know, they're having a Prime sponsorship in the middle of the ring, right? Which is sacred ground for most of us who are watching, right? There's going to be a Prime bottle in the middle of WWE rings at premium live events, and that just shows the impact that this dude has made since he's, you know, come on board. The in-ring stuff is great, but it's you know, it's his fan base has also gravitated here. And you know, the you mentioned three guys in this match: Tate with Logan Paul, Randy Orton, and Kevin Owens. And there's honestly a hidden fourth member in this match, which are a pair of brass knuckles, because that is Logan Paul's weapon of choice. It's been his cheating tool of choice, I should say, and that's the reason why he's taking on both of these guys, right? The way he won the United States title was thanks to some brass knuckles. The reason he retained it against Kevin Owens was because he got Kevin Owens to use them against him, causing a disqualification, and then he used these on Randy Orton to cost him a heavyweight title opportunity. So this is shaping up to be it has potential to steal the show, I think, just because of Logan Paul's propensity to do that, but also just being in the ring with, you know, two all-time greats like KO, like Randy Orton, who are beloved, and no matter whether they're a face or a heel, it's going to be one to watch this weekend.
Yeah, Shoemaker, I know that you're going to be enjoying the brass knuckles there. That'll be a fun little wrinkle. Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch. Like you said, it's going to be in Philadelphia. You guys are going to be in the building. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to do the top five characters of WrestleMania 40. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Through the Ringer. We're here talking WrestleMania 40 with David Shoemaker and Ben Cruz. And we love characters in the sport. We love storylines. Shoemaker, you're the best at breaking it all down for us. And we'll start with our number five character on the board, Drew McIntyre, a.k.a. CM Punk. And what should we expect to see this weekend? What kind of character portrayal do we expect to see, Shoemaker?
Well, no, Drew. It's not Drew McIntyre, a.k.a. CM Punk. It's Drew McIntyre, the wrestler who has kept CM Punk interesting, or kept CM Punk, yes, you know, his name through CM Punk's injury. Punk came back several months ago to WWE after some time with the competition and an even longer period of time just not wrestling. And he's one of the biggest stars in the business. And then he at the Royal Rumble this year, he tore his tricep in the match. Mm. And you know, what was going to be a major WrestleMania match turned into a DNP, injured reserve or whatever. And that was a huge loss for WWE. It felt like an enormous one at the time. But Drew McIntyre, who kind of took his spot and has been at the top of the card for a long time, has done an amazing job keeping Punk relevant and making himself even more relevant just by, you know, bad-mouthing Punk on the whole road to WrestleMania. It's been an incredible turn. When you rank the top people, there are a lot of other names that could have been on this list, right? I mean, there's if you had showed me the card 3 months ago, I probably would have put Becky Lynch, Rhea Ripley, Bayley. I mean, there's a bunch of people. Logan Paul, who could have gone, who I would have assumed would be above Drew McIntyre in this ranking. But Drew has done the hard work of making himself relevant, which is, you know, 75% of the pro wrestling business. And it's been pretty incredible to watch.
Yeah, it's good when you can be relevant, and it is good when you have some beef. I think we all love beef, and that is what this is all built on. So there you go, Drew McIntyre, number five. Number four, Ben, I'll go to you. Seth Rollins here at number four. We talked a little bit about him at the top, but just your thoughts for what he can do this weekend and what he represents as a character in the whole WrestleMania 40.
Yeah, so he's he's involved in the main event of night one, obviously with Rock, Roman, and Cody, but then he's also defending his title against Drew McIntyre on night two. So Seth's got a busy plate coming up this weekend, and it's honestly a little bit miraculous that he's even here because of the injury that he suffered in January on an episode of Raw against Jinder Mahal. Hurt his knee pretty bad, and there were a lot of questions about whether he would be back in time. At that time, they were wondering, should he relinquish his title? WWE was at risk of not only losing CM Punk, but but Seth Rollins as well. So the fact that he's here and going to be in two of the biggest matches of the weekend, as a babyface who is completely over, and you know, his outlandish outfits are one thing, but. I was there in Brooklyn at Raw, and as much as this dude kind of has played up the babyface thing, people are still singing his song, cheering him like you would not believe for something that you would think has a gimmick that's kind of, you know, expired a little bit in terms of, you know, our interest levels. He's going to be a big player this weekend, and there's also the aspect of he could turn on Cody. That's hanging, that's a cloud hanging above that I think some people have started to address. He started wearing darker clothing lately. A lot of reading in between the lines here, Tate, with Seth Rollins.
Yeah, I like that. Let's talk about Cody Rhodes. He's number three on the board, Shoemaker, and that sounds like some intrigue and some drama already right there.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Cody is one of the most miraculous things in modern professional wrestling, which is a straight-up babyface, just a pure white-bread good guy who everybody actually likes. John Cena at his peak and some would say this, you can measure his peak by it, was getting Cena sucks chants every time he came out, right? Right. I mean, Roman Reigns, when he was the top babyface, Roman Reigns was floundering until he turned heel, right? Cody Rhodes, it could not be more of a straight-laced, down-the-middle good guy, and people love him. And people love him for it. And he's the present and the future of the company. He and Roman Reigns are sort of at the very top, at least when The Rock's not around. And you could put him higher on this list, but we're quibbling here. You know, we're quibbling. I think the most interesting thing is going to be, he's predicted. I would say most people would say the betting odds are on him winning the title on Sunday night, but that's what we all thought last year, and Roman Reigns beat him then. So it's watching Cody Rhodes, not just on Saturday, not just on Sunday, but on Monday, to see if he walks out with that title. That's going to be the real interesting thing.
Yeah, it's like we don't get just boring good guys anymore. It feels like everybody's got to have some sort of catch. So when you see a baby face like Cody Rhodes, it is encouraging to see that it still can work at some level. Number two on the board, we were just talking about him, Roman Reigns. Ben, I'll start with you, and I'm going to get both your thoughts on Roman Reigns, but he's number two on the board for a reason, and he's going to have a big weekend in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I mean, to Dave's point earlier, last year everyone had Cody beating this dude for the title and kind of taking the face of the company title with him as well. And here we are a full calendar year later and he's still champion. You know, he's surpassed all days held championship records except for, you know, he's got a couple more to tick off, and that's what people are looking at of can he do it, right? And you know, there have been some conversations about has The Rock almost overshadowed Roman in his return, and they've tried to cover their bases a little bit in the last 2 weeks by saying, you know, Roman was the one who orchestrated and ordered the attack on Cody last week on Raw, and you know, even this week on Raw, Rock acknowledging Roman and kind of literally playing to his side, acting as a sidekick more so than, you know, the head of the table, which Roman claims to be. So he's got a really interesting weekend. His schedule is a bit more on the part-time side these days, and rightfully so. But, you know, I think there is some clamoring to see the world champion on TV more regularly in what would potentially be Cody Rhodes. But Roman's got, again, the fact that he's working back-to-back nights, I think this dude's is probably going to be filing for overtime at some point.
Yeah, and Shoemaker, I want to get your thoughts on Roman Reigns as well. Obviously, I think Ben made a great point about they're making sure there is a hierarchy there at the table a little bit with Roman and The Rock, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a careful balancing act, but I think everybody's coming out ahead, because the idea, like, you know, looking forward to this WrestleMania, the idea of doing Cody Rhodes, Roman Reigns, you know, part two, was not necessarily the most thrilling thing in the world, right? It's just not as fresh, and they made it feel like a much bigger deal. They've really succeeded in that. I think with Roman Reigns, I mean, Ben alluded to the fact that he's just knocking down championship records left and right, and he's going to go down on paper and in a larger sense as one of the greatest WWE champions of all time. You know, despite what you want to say about The Rock overshadowing him, The Rock played, you know, The Rock was the setup man last night on Raw. The Rock introduced Roman Reigns to the ring, and when Roman came out, I mean, that was the sort of pop, the sort of reaction that very few wrestlers get ever, you know, in any moment. And that was on an episode of Monday Night Raw. You could just see it when he comes down wearing a hoodie that he is actually one of the greatest of all time. And it's crazy to think about the fact that we're watching that in real time. Usually it takes a little bit of perspective.
I was going to say, and I think that perspective is something that really matters, you know, when it comes to understanding kind of the setup here for everything. And then the guy who has been a blockbuster star, we've seen him everywhere. He's now back to his roots, and that's number one on the character board. And let's talk about it. The Rock, Shoemaker, I wanted to just get you in that conversation because, I mean, the implications here and the amount of intrigue is, I feel like it's at the high. I've had people reach out to me I haven't talked to in years being like, WrestleMania is going to be great this weekend. So it's going to be a lot of fun with The Rock.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, The Rock is, listen, I'm as big of a Rock fan as you could possibly find, both in terms of wrestling and in terms of, you know, his movie career and everything else. Back in the Grantland days, I wrote a comprehensive, like, essay on all of the movies he had ever made. I watched them all back to back. It was quite an endeavor.
Walking Tall, underrated one. Good one.
Love Walking Tall. Love
so
Walking
good.
Tall.
It's so good.
Snitch is another great one. Yeah. There's a lot of them. But you know, and I'll, I mean, I just, I love The Rock. But the idea of him coming back, you know, I love it when he comes back. Like Ben said, it was the first time he saw him in, since he was 8 years old in the arena. There's nothing better than being in an arena and seeing a legend from your childhood make his entrance and talk to the crowd and get everybody going. But as a diehard wrestling fan, the tension comes in when you think, oh, if he's going to wrestle at WrestleMania, he's taking a spot from one of my current favorite guys, right? That's where it comes in. Like I said, The Rock has managed to make himself a piece of it without overshadowing everything. But I think there was a lot of fear with him coming in that, you know, this is the guy that would, like, you know, go on Instagram and try to make excuses for his movies not doing so well and stuff like that. And that wasn't always the, you know, we don't want to, we love Rock, the bad guy wrestler, or even when he's a good guy, the loudmouth wrestler. We don't want, you know, a Hollywood tequila salesman in the ring, you know, like whatever. Like we, and what's amazing, one of the most impressive things ever, is The Rock, like, putting his ego, not say he has a big ego, but putting himself aside and rediscovering the version of The Rock that made us all fall in love with him. And then kind of upping the ante on that. I mean, he's more diabolical than he's ever been. It's pretty incredible. It's pretty incredible. And he's an actually real life member of the TKO board, the, you know, the company that owns WWE. So he gets to be a sort of like evil owner at the same time too.
Yeah, and he's a board member.
Yeah. it's incredible.
I think that's great. One last thing before I let you guys go. I guess we'll do official predictions because that's what you're supposed to do in this business as best you can. I mean, you guys know how the storyline works. I'll start with you, Ben Cruz. Do you have one overarching prediction for the weekend, something that you expect or maybe something unexpected that could potentially happen?
I think I got to go with Cody Rhodes finishing his story. I think it's time. You know, I think that there still is the thought that Roman could continue this historic run, and I understand that. But I think what clicked for me was when Rock named himself the final boss. The final boss in video games is always beaten, right? Mm. So once he threw that label on himself, I just thought it was a matter of time. And look, it could, you know, come Monday, I could look like an idiot, and maybe he's the final boss of these video games that we could never beat as kids, and you just kind of move on and you quit, right? But I think that's where I'm going, is Cody Rhodes is emerging as the undisputed Universal Champion come Monday.
I like it. Shoemaker, what are your thoughts?
I think in some ways that's the safest bet of the weekend. But I wouldn't bet my house on it because we, like I said, we saw the same thing play out last year, you know, and the modern WWE, the kind of post Vince McMahon WWE, has for a long time made some pretty, let's say, obvious booking decisions. I always say that their MO seems to be, you know, is it cool? You know, does it make sense? Is it cool? Then let's do it, right? And that is really gratifying as a wrestling fan. But this whole build up to WrestleMania, they've been playing with our expectations. They've been, like, you know, turning our expectations on their heads just to keep attention, just to keep turning the screws. And man, it would be just icing on the cake for them to screw, if I can use the same word twice, different ways, Cody Rhodes one more time. I don't know. It's absolutely nuts. I think that, you know, there's that sure thing. Predictions, they're so hard to come by in this business, man. So hard to come by. I would say The Rock and Roman Reigns winning on night one is the surest thing, because they got to set up the tension for night two, no matter what happens. Outside of that, any of these things could go either way, man. Any of these things could.
Yeah, and you guys are in Philadelphia, home of M. Night Shyamalan, so I would expect a Shyamalan twist potentially in Philadelphia. Yep. Who knows? There's a lot of things that could happen. I appreciate you guys joining the show. And everyone, if you're keeping up with WrestleMania, you need to listen to the Masked Man Show. You guys will be breaking it down live from Philadelphia. Appreciate you fellas joining, and we'll have you back on Through the Ringer very soon. Thanks again.
Thank you, Tate.
Thanks, Tate.
Welcome back to Through the Ringer. Shout out to the Masked Man crew. They're going to be in Philadelphia. They're going to have a fun time this weekend. Tune in to those guys for all the coverage on WrestleMania 40. Also, shout out to Sirit Sohi, who joined the show to break down the Women's Final Four. She's the best, doing some great stuff there on the Ringer NBA YouTube. Now, let's talk about the Men's Final Four, because I'm going to be in Phoenix. I'm going to be covering this live, boots on the ground. And let's get into these matchups. NC State, Purdue, this line is +9.5 for the Wolfpack, +340 money line, over under 146.5. Let me just say this, Purdue, NC State, very similar. They are programs that have a lot of pride. They are fan bases that are excited to be back. These are going to be the biggest crowd that both these teams have gone and played in front of before. I think that could be an interesting wrinkle, obviously playing in this football arena. So Purdue, I know for sure, this is the first time they've been playing in April, so this will be a different experience. NC State playing in front of this size of a crowd, they have the star power for it. We get Zach Edey versus DJ Burns. DJ Burns is going to put some offensive pressure on Zach Edey, make him defend. I think this will be a very fun game. I'm not sure that it's going to be a game that ends with NC State winning this one. I think Purdue, last time we were in Phoenix, we saw the best two teams all year go, North Carolina and Gonzaga, play for the championship. I think this year is trending that same direction, but don't count out NC State. They have a whole lot of magic, but maybe you just take the points there. +9.5 NC State, -114. The second game is going to be fascinating. The defending champs, UConn, trying to go back-to-back for the first time since Billy Donovan did it with Florida back in 06-07, but kind of with a different team. The MOP from last year, Adamus Onogo, is not on this team. The star this year is the big Donovan Clingan, and he will be taking on Alabama. Pringle will be his main coverage, but Grant Nelson, a.k.a. the Dakota Durant, who had an incredible Sweet 16 game against North Carolina, will be a star for Alabama. And then Mark Sears, who he does not have the height, but he has the heart. And Alabama, they have been shooting the lights out. Mark Sears is taking about three more threes a game than he did during the regular season. He's also shooting at 45% clip. Alabama wants to get up and down. Connecticut wants to control the tempo of this game. If Alabama can get them out in space, turn the ball over, get them out running, I think that's the kind of game that Alabama wants. They scored the most points in the country. They have the fastest paced team in the country, and Connecticut can play fast. They can play slow. That's why they're so deadly, and they just come in waves and continue to score. So the line is +11.5 Alabama, +540 if you want to take Alabama. Connecticut -800 in this one. It does feel like this is UConn's Final Four to win. They had some flight trouble that, you know, to keep an eye on, flying out to Phoenix, that a lot of UConn fans are upset about. NCAA books travel, and they put them on a flight that left at past 1 a.m. in the morning and got them there really late in Phoenix on Thursday. So maybe something to monitor there. There's some connective tissue between Nate Oates and Dan Hurley. Dan Hurley pulled him out of the high school ranks, and he worked for Bobby Hurley at Buffalo. So I had Nate Oates on OSP. We talked about that a little bit. I think Alabama can cover that spread +11.5, but UConn beats everybody by double digits. And that is why that lead is at that level. So or that line is at that level. So Alabama, Connecticut will be a great game. I think Alabama will give them a bit of a test. So I would take the points in both games here and just ride on that. I think that Connecticut and Purdue will win. I think they will play in the national championship. And I think we're going to see Zach Edey take on Donovan Clingan, a.k.a. Kling Kong, on Monday night. So it's going to be a fun Final Four. I hope everybody's tuning in. If you want full-time coverage, go to One Shining Podcast. We'll be back on Monday with our thoughts on the national championship game for One Shining Podcast here on FanDuel TV. Otherwise, we'll be back on Tuesday here on Through the Ringer with Kevin O'Connor and Cousin Sal. We'll see you then.